Dinosaurs lived 65 million years ago. What is left of them is fossilized in the rocks. And it is in the rock that real scientists make real discoveries. Now, what John Hammond and InGen did at Jurassic Park is create genetically engineered theme park monsters, nothing more and nothing less.
Are you saying that you wouldn't want to get onto Isla Sorna and study them if you had the chance?
No force on Earth or Heaven could get me on that island.
Do you still want me to do the clap?
I mean, I would never deprive you of that.
Well, but, you know, if it...
No, it's wildly unnecessary, but okay. It's our signature now for our fan.
I clapped. I think we have fans. More, we have plural fans.
My mother and my mother-in-law both listen to the show.
Well, my mother listened, and my father listened to the show. So.
Oh, wow.
Now so that's four.
We're in two different demographics now. Hey, everybody, and welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your go-to source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. As always, I am Sam.
And as always, I am Will, and we are back.
We're back, coming to you live from war-torn Los Angeles.
We're on fire, but we're going to podcast to you.
We're on fire. Hollywood has fallen. We're holed up with the last of the resistance at the Universal City Walk, and we will defend the Transformers ride until our dying day. Be strong, boys. Speaking of Universal, this week, because Jurassic World is rebirthing in theaters in a couple of weeks, we are taking it back to the summer of 2001, and we are talking about the lean, mean 92-minute visit to Isla Sorna that is Jurassic Park 3 scratch marks.
This is amazing. I had never seen this movie, Sam.
So you've never seen this?
I had never seen this.
It's so short.
It is incredibly short. But no, I had never seen this. The summer of 2001, I remember seeing the ads for it, and I was like, I'd have no interest in seeing this. I think I was all in on Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back that summer, so...
Well, I won't lie. We've talked about this before. That was the first Jay and Silent Bob movie I saw, and I worked my way backwards. I don't know how I got away with enjoying it at all, having no idea
it's just
who any
one
of the characters.
Inside joke, yeah.
Yeah, it's like I'd never seen Chasing Amy or Mallrats. I had no context for Bluntman and Chronic. Summer 2001. Yeah, the last desperate scream of the 90s.
Yes.
And this movie is speaking of things that happened in 2001. I think this movie's greatest historical significance now is it had the Spider-Man teaser before it.
Oh.
With the Twin Towers, where he catches the helicopter and the web between the Twin Towers, and that teaser got pulled later in 2001 for
reasons
that are now a matter of historical record.
I remember seeing that trailer before Final Fantasy The Spirits Within.
Yes, it was before both. I just remember I didn't see the Final Fantasy The Spirits Within in theaters, and I saw this, and it had the Spider-Man teaser.
Yeah, so I did see Final Fantasy. I didn't see this one, so I don't know. Summer 2001 was a weird summer.
Only you would have skipped a Jurassic Park sequel to see Final Fantasy The Spirits Within.
To be fair, it was my friend's birthday. That was the movie he picked. I didn't pick that one.
I want to see. I need a movie that looks that's like Aeon Flux, but bad. And it's got the name of a video game we all like, but has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I don't know. He was a big fan of Final Fantasy VII.
And all the characters
VII,
look the same. Remember when they put the lead character, Ming-Na Wen's character, for that had like a spread in Maxim?
God, yes. 2001 was a weird
year. They thought they'd cracked it. Like, here's a
really
CG
did.
Character who's hot and realistic. We're going to give her a spread in Maxim. I mean, nothing says 2001 more than also, remember this page in Maxim?
God. Okay, but let's wind back the clock. Summer 2001.
Like, well, let's wind back the clock to summer 1993. Now, I can't speak for all millennials or Gen Xers, but I got to say, I'm guessing... Is there a better movie to have come out in theaters for like an 8 and a 9 year old or a 7 and a 9 year old or whatever we were than Jurassic Park in 1993?
No,
Is it the perfect movie to come out for two, like, preteens.
It is the perfect movie for an eight-year-old to see in the theater. I mean, it's just, like, I went dinosaur crazy that summer. I mean, did you read, like, the behind-the-scenes book that they made for it? I read the junior novelization. I read the behind-the-scenes book.
I definitely had the junior novelization. They also, at the Boston Museum of Science, had a whole special exhibition about Jurassic Park with, nice, like, the full-size dinosaurs there and clips from the movie. And it was huge.
It was,
like,
everywhere.
I consider it Spielberg's best movie, but it was definitely like, this was the intro to Spielberg for probably an entire generation of people, because his lead up to Jurassic Park had been kind of an esoteric run through the late 80s, with the exception of Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, because you had Color Purple, Empire of the Sun, Always, the movie that Spielberg made that no one remembers,
right.
and Hook had been a big disappointment, and I never saw Hook till way later, so it's not like one of my childhood movies. But then 93 was like just Spielberg back with a vengeance, because he had Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year. And they were both like landmark movies for wildly different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it was like the year of Spielberg, and I remember everyone talking about Spielberg. I remember the grown-ups in my life who wouldn't let me see Schindler's List talking about Schindler's List a lot. And
I didn't know if I was forbidden from seeing Schindler's List. I think my folks just took it for granted I didn't want to see it.
Yeah,
when
that
I
was
7 years old.
That was probably more it. I just remember it being a big deal, everyone talking about it. And
yeah.
And then, of course, Jurassic Park being like this just monster hit that had, it felt like it had months of hype leading up to it. I mean,
lived up to the hype.
Yeah.
It was one of those movies that was like in theaters for like 6-7 months.
Yeah.
I remember when it came out on VHS the next year, it was like the Christmas gift.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it was huge, and that summer my folks and I went to Hawaii, too, as like a family trip, so that was like sort of big on my mind, too, because it was, you know, all the lush tropical stuff, and I mean, it's not like a great movie in terms of characters, but it's like, it is the quintessential blockbuster in terms of just, it is packed to the gills with just awesome set pieces. I mean, it really works like a roller coaster.
And just incredible special effects.
I mean, that too. Groundbreaking special effects.
For 1990, much like I talk, you know, I'm always going off about Return of the Jedi and how incredible it looks for 1983. The CGI of Jurassic Park is 1993, and it's pretty much what, you know, that's that line in the movie. It's like, we're out of a job. Don't you mean extinct? That was like Phil Tippett and the Go Motion effects guys talking about their line of work was
dead and
gone. There'd been some CG in movies before that. There'd been Terminator 2, but this was it. Like, oh my God, some of the shots in this movie, even now, are incredible. The T-Rex busting through the electric fence. Even the opening scene, the first time you see the Brachiosaurus, it's like, it's got that 1990s CG kind of, it's hard to describe the texture thing. They hadn't quite cracked it, but it's like the acting sells it. The fact that it's in a real place, it's not a CGI environment, sells it. The weight, the sound design, and lest we not forget the fucking score.
Right.
Like,
I mean, it's
like we don't need to, we don't, but like as John Williams scores go, like this one is just, you know,
it's pretty spectacular.
I don't know if it's like top five best, but it might be top five most like iconic ones.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, what you said it, I think, during our Superman 3 discussion. It's like sometimes just the John Williams score can kind of carry you over a lot, like paper over a lot of problems.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And this is not a franchise without its problems, for sure. And this is a thing I sort of hadn't realized till I was putting together my notes for this movie, is that I'd kind of completely forgotten that Spielberg didn't make a movie between 1993 and 1997.
Really? Wasn't anything?
There's Schindler's List and Jurassic Park in 93, and he comes back in 97 to do a similar dinosaur and Oscar movie, but neither of them are quite on the same level, because he did Lost World and Amistad.
Right.
And Gosh. Lost World was like, he's openly said that was him basically like making a kind of movie he didn't want to make anymore. And it shows in that movie.
Yeah, it's a movie where he's still like got like some excitement to build, like craft a set piece, but he just doesn't, his heart's clearly not in it. It's
This is something that I noticed in this movie, and it's definitely in The Lost World, and I think it is to a point in the new ones as well, is that the sense of wonder in the first movie is so quickly replaced with a sense of cynicism.
Right.
It's like, not just in the characters, but in the tone. There's no one is in awe of the dinosaurs like they should be after the first movie.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this too as I was watching it. It's I think it's because instead of in the first Jurassic Park, all the dinosaurs act like animals. Like they don't feel like movie monsters. They feel like animals, and I think that's part of why that movie hit so hard, is because the dinosaurs feel like real things that you would interact with in the real world. They're just giant. And then in this one, and you know, to a lesser extent, The Lost World, these guys are movie monsters. They don't act like anything other than we're going to menace you and try to kill you. And then when it tries to do that sense of awe, you're like, I don't know, these are movie monsters. I can't sort of get by into being awed by them. You know, when it tries to play the John Williams score and you see, you know, the pterodactyls flying or the brachiosauruses or whatever walking around, you're kind of like, I don't know, I don't buy into this, the awe, you know?
Yeah, there's like a cut and paste quality to it as well. Like, it's just like, here are your dinosaurs. Here, you've seen them all before. There's nothing, there's the only real... This is also, yeah, this is a movie that's like also the set pieces are all entirely things from the first two movies that had to get cut.
Right.
Like, even now, in Jurassic World Rebirth that's coming out, for some reason, people are still getting amped because there's finally going to be a sequence where a T-Rex is in a river with a little boat, because that was in the original book and never made it into the first movie, and people really want to see this, I guess.
Listen, they love the water interaction, Sam. They want to see the dinosaur go in and out of the water.
You're so jazzed that there's a third Avatar coming out this year. He's just like, that's...
Oh my
Christmas
gosh, I'm so
cannot
excited.
Come so... Avatar fire and ass. I'm being mean. I haven't actually seen Way of Water yet, and I'm sure it's going to be a visual marvel. Though it would be hilarious if, for whatever reason, Avatar Fire and Ash is like 92 minutes long and the effects feel really rushed.
Kind of like this movie.
This movie's weird. Like, some of the effects are fantastic, and then some of them feel like really, like, just get it
really
rendered
ropey.
And get in.
Yeah.
Like, the pterodactyl stuff's all great.
Yeah.
And the raptors, all the practicals also, it has to be said, all the Stan Winston stuff, the Spinosaurus, the T-Rex, they're just these huge animatronics, much like the first two movies, look great. And they're so well done. Even in broad daylight, they still feel like they have weight and dimension to them. And the Spinosaurus is kind of a cool looking dinosaur. He's a weird, like, angry crocodile thing.
Yeah.
It's just a speed run of Jurassic Park, though. That's the problem.
Well, it's a speed run of Jurassic Park, but it's the movie that you kind of expect Jurassic Park to be that it's not. You know what I mean? Because Jurassic Park, again, it has like that sense of wonder and awe to it that I think elevates it above a lot of other blockbusters.
Yeah. Whereas this... And there's you're in awe in the scene the first time you see a dinosaur in like broad daylight. You see the Brachiosaurus. Right. The characters are in awe of this majestic creature that has been brought back to life, and we as an audience are in awe of this majestic creature that's been brought to life by special effects.
Right, exactly.
It's interesting, like in Jurassic World, they try to have that same moment using the same score. It's the first time you hear like da 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 da, and it's just the kid running out to the balcony to see they've brought a theme park to life.
Right.
It's not about dinosaurs or anything. It's just like, we finally made Epic Universe.
Yeah, I mean, and Jurassic, the Jurassic World movies, although I haven't seen, is it Dominion? That's the one where they bring everybody back? I haven't seen that
that's,
one.
That's, yeah, Dominion is the whole gang. Fallen Kingdom's the middle one.
Right.
I haven't seen Fallen Kingdom or Dominion. I'm not really looking forward to them because I think there's an element of that cynicism that's there. They're modern blockbusters. They're trying to do something completely different. I can't begrudge them wanting to keep this franchise going.
Yeah, it sort of has that thing where all the dinosaurs are just, they're movie monsters now. They don't feel like real animals.
The movie's also kind of like, we've got, like, the characters in it and the movie itself is like, we got a T-Rex. We got raptors. Look, it's Triceratops. As opposed to that first movie where, even if the characters aren't all that aren't all that dimensional, it's a great cast.
Right.
And you believe to a person that they are in awe of these incredible creatures that they're seeing.
Yeah, exactly. And you sort of get to the first Jurassic World where, you know, the Indominus Rex or whatever, you know, the thing that they have to do to make it like teleports at certain points.
Like the Alien franchise seems way more interested in telling stories about androids and replicant human beings because they can't get Blade Runner to be a franchise. The Jurassic World movies definitely feel like they're trying to go back to like themes that Michael Crichton was talking about in a lot of his books about genetic engineering and science run amok. And I get that on a certain level because there's only so much you can do with we made a theme park for dinosaurs and they got out and they're going to eat us. Like maybe that only works so many times, but it's unfortunately there's still the Jurassic movies and they have to have a bunch of dinosaurs in them.
Right. Yeah. It always just feels just these, you know, just movie monsters that kind of run around and eat people. And what I like about Jurassic Park 3 is that it doesn't look down on what it's trying to do. It's like, this is a B movie. This is a B monster movie. We're going to get right to the chase.
This is a Joe Johnston movie, baby. You want 92 minutes of quality pulp, here's your boy.
And so it's like character motivations, I don't know, we're going to kind of just yada, yada, yada those things. It's like, it feels like half the movie's missing.
You can get Alan Grant to do anything as long as you show him you have a checkbook.
I mean, we're going to have William H. Macy freaking out about dinosaurs. We're going to have this kid surviving on the island somehow. Like, it really does not give two shits about trying to be, like, a proper, you know, a movie, a Spielberg movie, you know?
They were trying their damnedest in the development leading up this to make it a bigger movie. Like, it was going to have a lot more, like, stuff going on. Like, I think the skeleton of it was always the same of like Alan Grant gets roped into going to Isla Sorna but originally it was we think the dinosaurs might be breeding or right. We're afraid they're going to get off the island or something like that. And it's just they brought in, of all people, Alexander Payne and Jim Taylor, which I remember seeing that in the credits. I'm like, Alexander Payne? About Schmitz? Alexander Payne? I looked at them and was like, apparently they were even like, really, us? You want us? But Universal, they've done a rewrite on Meet the Parents. People forget Meet the Parents was like a monster,
hit
2000.
Yeah.
So they liked the rewrite they'd done on Meet the Parents. So they brought him in to do this. And I think they basically were the ones that were like, just streamline the shit out of it.
Yeah.
Like it is as stripped down and unpretentious as a Jurassic. It's just like, we're going to Skull Island for 90 minutes. Like, no fuss, no muss. Yep. And on one level, that's very unambitious. But on another level, I admire the brevity of it. Or I appreciate the brevity of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, it's one of those things where you're like, well, what do you want out of a Jurassic Park sequel? And it's like, I don't know, just monster mayhem. Like, just dinosaur mayhem. Like,
I don't know. It's kind of like the Godzilla Kong monster movies where I'm like, there have been a wide, like, even just the American ones in this new series, like, there have been a wide array of tones, and every single one of them, I'm like, I still don't know what I want.
Right, I don't know what works for me in this.
I saw Godzilla 2014, and at the time, I remember liking it, and then, like, Shin Godzilla came out, and I was like, oh, this Toho just does this better. And I think it is, like, I think I need a little bit of pulpy silliness, like, Godzilla Hearts Kong, The New Empire, has, like, some real silly pulpiness to it.
Yeah, I mean...
And I like that about that, and without making a mockery of itself. Like, I really enjoyed that movie. I think the problem is, I think this is just going to be one of those problems, like, these all are Jurassic Park sequels, and Jurassic Park is such a, like, a special movie, not just to, like, people in our generation, but just in general. It's such a lightning in a bottle, once in a lifetime achievement of a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think the problem, you know, with any sequel, I think you want sort of a question to be asked at the end of the first movie that isn't answered, you know, that, so then you get to the sequel and it's like, okay, well, we're gonna address that. And Jurassic Park,
and the question in this, the answer in this one is, well, it took us like a couple more years to get the flying dinosaur effects right. Now we can do it. Now we're good. Let's go.
Exactly. And it always feels so funny to me to be like, well, we're gonna make a franchise out of Jurassic Park, because it's not like at the end of the first movie you're kind of not like, well, now what? You're kind of like, that was a full meal. I don't need any more.
Yeah, you don't need it. Of course you're going to make a sequel. Well, right. Of course something has survived.
Right.
You know, we're going to find a reason to go back. Like, that's we're not saying don't make a sequel, but I really think with Jurassic Park, it is, there's like three ways you can go. One is this, Jurassic Park 3, lean, mean, you want to see the dinosaurs, you want to go back for like a, like, get that the fast pass and go back real fast.
Right.
That's this. The other one is, what if they actually opened the park? Right, yeah. And they did that one, and it was a huge hit. It was good for them. And then the other way to go, and they haven't quite done this, and I wonder if Rebirth is going to be this, is big, weird swing.
Yeah.
Like, remember the very infamous Jurassic Park 4 script that went around for a while? I know Harry Knowles did a review.
That's the
of
one
it
where something. The raptors had like machine guns and stuff. Or is
they
that,
they basically, yeah, like they were all but rebooting Dino Riders, right. But it was like they were genetically modified velociraptors with like fingers, and they were working with this like Soldier of Fortune character who had to go back to the island and get the Barbasol can.
Right, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, it, you know, crazy. Like, it's a movie where I'm like, if they made this, it is like, okay, I'm putting all the chips in on not the best hand, and it's either going to be the biggest bomb in the world or it's going to be a monster hit.
Yeah. No, I mean, Fallen Kingdom? Is that the second one? That's what it's called, right?
Fallen Kingdom, Frozen Empire, New Empire, Empire of the Sun, Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, too many empires. Too many empires.
Empire Records.
Kingdom of the Spiders, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Anyway,
yeah.
In Fallen Kingdom, they do sort of like I don't really want to spoil it, but they do kind of...
I know how it ends. You know, I know what's going on.
Well, they do this thing in the, sort of this gothic house, and it feels a lot like Alien with the raptors, with dinosaurs, yeah. And it kind of works. It doesn't really, but it kind of works. But
this is another thing, and obviously this is one of those things that I would want, but I will not. You can't have it be this way if you want to make a 7-movie franchise. I'm of the opinion, and this ties back to a criticism I think people have of a moment in Lost World, I'm of the opinion that humans should never get one over on the dinosaurs. They should always be on the back foot.
Yeah.
So I know people always complain about the gymnastics scene in the Lost World, and I'm fine with that scene, except for the fact that they show that she impaled the velociraptor. And I'm kind of the opinion that, like, the best you can do is get away from these things. This is nature that you were never meant to coexist with. You shouldn't be able to machine gun it or torpedo it or you know, anything like that. It is beyond you. And for, in this movie's case, 3D print a little horn that can trick them.
That is the weirdest thing I think this movie, well, I mean, this movie pulls out some very strange things, but that is like one of those things where it's like they came up with that at the very end of like shooting or in the middle of
someone
post.
Read an
like,
article in Wired like, about 3D printers.
Like, what? We figured out how the raptors communicated with each other.
Everything about Alessandro Nivola's character feels like it was done in rewrites, yeah, and reshoots. Like everything about him, like. And then, like, there was a second round of reshoots where they, like, I watched it this time. He's so dead.
He is so dead.
They literally, I've never noticed before, but the as he's, like, going down the river and they're just pecking him, the water is turning blood red.
Yeah, it's like, that guy,
he's so
dead.
Cannot
survive. Yeah, I was amazed that he was back.
And I was like, is this guy testing really well? Like,
oh, we like that guy. The guy with the lucky pack. You gotta have the lucky pack, right?
They had a lucky pack in the second movie, too. Julianne Moore had a lucky pack that saves her.
Too many lucky packs. That's what I say.
This franchise is all about lucky backpacks and satellite phones. Satellite phones loom large in the original trilogy.
One of the funniest gags, though, is that cell phone ringing in the dinosaur's belly. That is awesome.
That is genuinely great. This time watching, I was like, oh, right, because there's been an extended sequence without the Spinosaurus. Right. So you've forgotten about it. It is a real... It's such a good moment.
It's such a great gag. That feels like such a Joe Johnston, like... touch.
Yeah, for folks that don't know Joe Johnston, he was a special effects and design guy. He got his start working on the Star Wars movies. He designed Boba Fett, the look of Boba Fett. But he went on to direct, and he's directed some top notch like the kind of B movies they need to be making again. He did Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He did The Rocketeer. Yep. He did October Sky. He did this. He did The Wolfman, but. You know, nobody's perfect.
Captain America, the first Avenger.
And he did Captain America. He did the Captain America, the first Avenger, yeah. Which is like, you know, the Rocketeer.
Yeah, in the MCU, yeah.
Yeah, he's a really fun resume that he had there for a number of years. And this is, I don't know if this isn't his best movie, but it's definitely like in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I mean, he always kind of struck me as like a Joe Dante type, where it's sort of like they're kind of like cartoonists and sort of like mischievous at heart. And so
he reminds me of James Mangold too. Yeah, he clearly likes just these like dusty practical effects worlds, and the bigger the movie gets, the harder it is for him to rein it in.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I mean, and it's like, it feels like this movie had a lot of, it feels like Universal had a lot riding on it, but also not a ton, that they kind of let him get away with a lot. It's sort of what it seemed like.
Well, no one really speaks very highly of it. William H. Macy apparently hated being on set, and he would always talk about they always had Spielberg's chair on set with his name on it, but he never came to set. So it felt like a threat more than anything else.
Oh, no.
Spielberg got a deal where he got like 20% of the profits or something. Damn. So, yeah.
I hope he at least saw a cut or something. I mean, I get.
It's his franchise. He's allowed to.
Yeah.
But it is like, it's nice to see Sam Neill again. I always like him. He's now a podcast part three repeat offender.
Yeah, well, he hits the part three parters club, right?
Because when we do Dominion.
Oh, right, when we do Dominion, then he'll hit the three parters. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think it's weird that Ellie has remarried, Laura Dern, Ellie Sattler has remarried and has two kids, yet he somehow never met her husband before.
That was weird.
But he also knows the parrot really well.
Right. That was very strange. It was a weird interaction.
I guess that's how we can very organically establish that he has ties to the Costa Rican government.
Yeah.
This movie's all about the other guy. Because the guy dating Taya Leone, who has real divorced dad energy in the opening, where he's like, you promise me you'll be safe with him. And I'll be fine. We're going parasailing.
We're going parasailing off the dinosaur-infested island.
Your mother doesn't need to know, kid. Do they ever see anything?
No, I guess not.
No. Like, in general, do you think parasailers on the periphery of Isla Sorna ever get a good look at anything?
No, I mean, maybe a pterodactyl swoops over and...
Well, but they're all in the cage.
Oh, that's right. Well, no, they're out.
We don't know what...
They're out, though.
They're out at the end. Oh. They're out at the end.
Oh, okay.
But the whole, there's the shot of the door pops open.
That's right.
They're in a cage.
Yeah. I somehow...
It's a bird cage. For what? Birds, I don't know.
What do you think?
Michael Jeter's in this movie.
Yes, he's great as like a mercenary guy who likes to blow stuff up with his friends.
The OG Mr. Noodle from Sesame Street.
Yeah.
If for those of you that have had to sit through a lot of Elmo's world over the years.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I mean, it's it's nice that it's like there aren't a ton of characters. It just can kind of get right to brass tacks, and you're just like, all right, here we go. Dinosaurs are attacking, and we're
it really doesn't seem to have any agenda whatsoever as a movie, which is, you know, I think maybe unbecoming of the Jurassic Park franchise, but, you know, it's a completely inoffensive experience.
Yeah,
people say this is the worst one, but I don't know. I think it's too... I take this over The Lost World, and because The Lost World is a more frustrating experience.
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie that just knows exactly what it's trying to do and then just does it. I wouldn't say it does it particularly well, but it doesn't do it badly either.
It's got the most annoying characters.
Yes,
though.
It does.
Like, I love William H. Macy and I love Taylor Leone, but good lord.
They suck. Yeah, they argue and they yell and then they keep yelling at each other for yelling, and it's
just... She totaled 3 cars in 3 years? Is she okay?
Well, she didn't total one of those. He just said it was totaled because he wanted a different car.
Oh, okay. Still.
It's like, I don't know if that really shows that you are a bad planner. Are you, like, a drunk? What is happening?
Yeah, are you all right?
I don't know. The kid turned out okay. He was able to survive by himself on that island for, like, 6 weeks.
Yeah, he did
all
right.
Right?
He put a bottle under a T-Rex.
Yeah.
Got the pee.
That was absurd. The whole movie's really absurd, though. So
it's
absurd,
but it moves too fast for
you to really
think about it.
Yeah.
It's like when there are absurd moments where you have a beat to consider it. It's always very like when the movie just out of nowhere decides like "fuck you, Ian Malcolm." Fuck you.
Yeah. I thought Ian Malcolm was full of himself. Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I wrote in my notes, it's really just a set piece delivery system. It doesn't really have anything else on its mind. It's a roller coaster.
It's very much a roller coaster. And then the one thing they kind of try to establish, which is that the raptors can communicate, it's very silly.
Yeah.
It's executed about as well as I could expect. They talk to each other the way Dr. Octopus's arms talk to each other in Spider-Man 2, where it's just kind of like...
And I like that the lead raptor has like a mohawk, like stripe in Gremlins. I thought that was a nice touch.
I also admire that this franchise was restrained, so restrained that it took 3 movies before they got a Barney reference in there.
Yeah, that was wild.
Because Barney was hot in the streets in the 90s. Yeah. So, you know, I'm amazed it took until 2001.
Well, I'm surprised they didn't pull out the Weird Al Yankovic Jurassic Park song. That's...
Well, it might not exist in the world.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. He wrote a song about Congo instead.
What is that parodying? It's not the... It's not MacArthur
Park.
It's
Gloria Estefan Miami Sound Machine song. Come on, about it. T-Rex Congo. Any longer. Gorilla lasers. Like you said, it is just set pieces, and some of them are really good.
Yeah.
Everything with the pterodactyls, that whole sequence is great.
Yes.
If you have to suspend disbelief that you could reuse a parachute like that.
Right.
But
but
besides that, it's well, like stuff's all well constructed. It's just there's not much going on. It's like it's just it is like in and out, and maybe it needed more breathing room, but I feel like it wouldn't have, it didn't, clearly there was nothing that needed to be said with the franchise at this point.
No, it was just sort of like, I don't know, people want Dino Mayhem, let's give them Dino Mayhem. I mean, like, Hollywood blockbusters were in such a weird place.
It turns out, summer 2001, Universal found out what people wanted more was Vin Diesel living life a quarter mile at a time.
That's right. But no, I mean, to the end of the 90s and the beginning of the 2000s, where Hollywood and blockbusters, they could not sort of figure out what people wanted, so they just kind of threw everything at the wall to see what stuck, you know?
Well, this was a year where, like, everything was about to pop, and I don't mean just, like, in the geopolitically. I mean, like, literally, like, you think about, like, the top-grossing movies from that year all came at the end of the year.
Right.
Like, Lord of the Rings, the summer stuff, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter,
right.
and we were just waiting. We all knew that there was a new Star Wars and a Spider-Man coming out in the spring.
Right.
You look at the movies that came out this year, there are a lot of like, stuff that's either sequels to things, like comedies, like mid-budget comedies still could make $150 million back then. But it is a lot of like, I think of these as like movies where if I go back, I would say the effects didn't hold up.
Right.
Like, yeah. The Mummy Returns, Pearl Harbor, the first Tomb Raider movie.
Oh my God, that's right. And then AI came out this summer too.
Cats and Dogs.
Oh my God.
But I always forget this was 2001. The second highest grossing movie of the year was Shrek.
Oh, that's right.
And no one saw that one coming.
That came out of nowhere. What was the highest grossing?
Oh, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. Yeah.
It came out in November. Lord of the Rings came out at Christmas.
Right.
So Lord of the Rings is technically the 10th highest grossing movie of 2001.
Right.
But I think it made more money
as it went.
Yeah.
Because it was the last.
Well, that's the thing. It's like Harry Potter was like this hotly anticipated franchise. It had been a big deal just as books for 3 years, and Lord of the Rings was like, holy shit, they're going to do Lord of the Rings, and it looks good.
Well, and that's sort of where the pivot point is for what Hollywood became kind of into the end of the 2000s, which was all about epics and, you know,
mm-hmm.
more serialized.
And we were 1 year off from the first, the 2000s era of superhero movies,
because
this is still the superhero dead zone,
right?
Like this is post Batman and Robin,
and the first X-Men had come out, but other than that,
true. Like they were starting to test the waters. Like we knew Spider-Man was coming,
yeah.
But you think of the top 10 movies that year are all just sort of a portrait of that era where people we all just went to the movies a lot, like Rush Hour 2, you know. The Planet of the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes, Hannibal.
Did Men in Black 2 was 2002, wasn't it?
Men in Black 2 was 2002. Terminator 3 was 2003.
Right.
It's, you know, by the time we were in college, the whole landscape had changed. Yeah. And there's a reason why this franchise went into development hell for like a decade.
Right.
And they didn't know what to do with it. And Spielberg wanted no part of it. And it just kind of, like, I think they just, I get what this was kind of, this one was a real, like, as threequels go, to bring it back on point, on theme here, this is an Is This Anything threequel. Like, do we have anything here?
Yeah.
Is there anything left to do with this? Is it going to make, is it a money printer or is it not?
Yeah.
And I think it was just like, people want other shit.
Yeah, no one wants dinosaurs right now. So we'll wait until sort of the nostalgia boom hits. And what, was it 2015 when Jurassic World came out?
2015, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean.
Because Fallen Kingdom was like 2019, I think.
Yeah.
2018, 2019,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now they're sort of more on the 3 year. We're gonna pump one of these out every 3 years because
the Jurassic World movies
are like farting money. They make so much money.
Did the last one make money?
Yes, it made a ton of money.
Did it make, like, wow, yeah, because like, nothing makes money anymore.
The last one made a ton of money, and it was, everyone was like, why? No one likes these movies. But I think everyone's like, I don't know, dinosaurs, yay!
I think it is kind of like the Transformers franchise, where it is just like, we want to see big robots fight.
Yeah.
We want to see dinosaurs.
I wouldn't be.
I don't know how Rebirth is going to do, but I suspect it'll do just fine.
Yeah, it's like people are like, I don't know. Dinosaurs are a fun way to spend my time. I don't really care if any of these characters have anything going on with them.
Well, you come on, it's ScarJo and Mahershala Ali and other guy. I look at the credits and I'm like, Rupert Friend's in this, but that's not Rupert Friend. That's a guy that looks like Rupert Friend.
Is that guy?
Who are you? You're the part that Glenn Powell said no to.
I mean, and it's Gareth Evans, right? Or that's not the Raid guy. Or is that the Raid guy? I get my Gareth's
Gareth
mixed
it's
up.
Gareth Edwards. It's Gareth of Godzilla, right? And Rogue One, okay. And I mean, there is one thing that Gareth Edwards does very well, which is people looking up at something really big.
And making it, like, have a lot of import and impact. I mean, he's not very good at, like, human characters, but I think he's perfect for, like, big spectacle stuff, so.
He's good at human characters, but then the movie tries to get you interested in the less interesting characters. Like, Godzilla has a really interesting character, and then they kill him off, and... You know, Monster is, you know, it's a very simple movie. The characters are engaging, but it's a real calling card of a movie. And then, I don't know, Rogue One has its own, like, changes were made.
A lot of changes were made. And,
I'm so glad there's no third Star Wars is on the horizon.
Yeah.
I'm so glad they're going to need to make at least two in some capacity before we have to go back to that franchise. Because for the franchise that contains probably some of my absolute favorite movies, it makes me so grumpy these days.
Yeah, same here. Although I will say, Sam, you should watch Andor. Andor is really good. It is worth your time. But if I can watch it in some sort of like show, it's like a good show.
If I can watch it in like Daredevil's sensory deprivation chamber where I don't have to hear any discourse about it, because my God, people talking about it make me want to tear my hair out.
I mean, it's with everything now. Discourse is like no fun anymore. It's like everyone, like fans are so annoying. They just nitpick things to death now. And it's just.
Everybody, get the fuck off social media. It's just, like, Jesus Christ. Go to the park. Go to a theme park. Go see some dinosaurs. Go to the Natural History Museum.
And see the dinosaurs. Yeah.
See the dinosaurs.
No, I mean, it's like, you know...
Jurassic Park is in every city in the world in the summer is at some outdoor screening. Go see that.
Have you watched Killer of Killers yet? Not to get us completely off topic, but...
I haven't. I know.
It's a blast, but like... The fans, the Predator fans, which, again, the movie is, like, fun, and it is tons of fun, and, like, the Predator fans are just so, like, well, I don't think the Predator should act like this, or I don't think the Predator, and you're like, come on, guys!
You should see the look on my face. And, like, you guys are actually getting good Predator movies for the first time in 20, 30 years.
It's like
what do you want? What are they apologists for? Predators? No, the Predator?
No,
I
think that it's one of those. I think it's a lot like Ghostbusters, where the first two movies were such formative movies for certain people that a lot of what they want is just those movies repackaged in a different way.
I have my movies that I'm precious about, like everybody, but there are some movies where I thank the gods. I thank Crom that I didn't see them until way after my formative years. Like, I'm so glad I didn't see Back to the Future 2 until I was like 22 years old, or I didn't see The Breakfast Club until after I'd finished high school. So I'm just like, I don't have these. I can be dispassionate about something.
Well, I mean, and like Predator was a very formative movie for me, but it's like I didn't have it encased in amber for me that it has to be like the other movies have to be a certain way. I also don't think that the first Predator is like a serious movie because it is very funny and like silly at times, you know?
No, I mean, it's it's the Ghostbusters is the weird one, because it is just like diehard Ghostbusters fans seem to be remembering a completely different movie in their heads than the movie that exists.
Yeah, exactly.
Where the ghost goes down on Dan Aykroyd.
Right. It's like, what movie are you watching? Or it's like somebody on Reddit was trying to convince me that Raiders of the Lost Ark was like super dark and gritty. And it's like, what are you talking about?
Is that like a thing where it's because movies nowadays have such an artificial sheen to them because they're all filmed in like a walk-in closet? And the fact that Raiders of the Lost Ark is just like real sets and real dust.
It must
like,
be
it's
that.
It's literally got grit.
It must be that, because it's like, I don't know, man. A monkey does a Nazi salute. that's a funny movie.
I guess if you released an Indiana Jones movie now on that scale, it would seem like Logan.
Yeah, probably.
You know, just this smaller, realer, more grounded movie. But that's just because it was 1982.
They could only do so much. Anyway,
we're talking about Jurassic Park. And it's a franchise that extends from our childhood to now. Yeah. And the original was much smaller and grittier than these ones.
But no, I mean, it's so weird. Like, the discourse, like, it used to be fun to go onto the, I mean, it doesn't exist anymore, but to go onto the IMDb movie boards and, like, discuss movies and things, and now it's, like, not fun to
I remember I had just this protracted argument with someone on the IMDb message boards about who would win in a fight, Riddick or Hellboy.
See, I miss those types of arguments.
Yeah, and I think it came down to location. If they're on a crematoria, Hellboy wins because he's fireproof.
Right? Oh, boy. What a time.
What a time to be alive. But I think we're going to find, speaking of, like, just of long-running franchises, we're going to jump ahead to Jurassic, from Park to World, and do Jurassic World Dominion next. And I haven't seen Fallen Kingdom, like I said, and I haven't seen this, and I have to imagine it is going to feel like apples and oranges compared to Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, I think the 2000s franchise machine was not as sophisticated, for lack of a better word, as it is now.
Well, yeah. Where, I mean, I think it is.
It was sort of like a coup to bring back, you know, Alan Grant. It was sort of like a thing, you know. You didn't.
I mean, I think it seemed like a coup.
I mean, it probably
I think
wasn't.
It was just like, it was like Sam Neill was like, I'm not going to do it unless it's like, I'm not just going to do it if it's like two lines.
Yeah, I mean,
if you don't follow Sam Neill on Instagram, by the way, Will and the folks at home, you have to. It's such a good follow. He just spends all his time hanging out on his like vineyard, like with his pigs and like chickens. It's real wholesome. And when he was filming the Jurassic World sequel with him, Jeff Goldblum would just be sitting in the hotel lobby playing piano together. It's just he just seems like he's living his best life, and I'm so happy for him.
He seems like he's a fun guy to hang out with. So.
He seems like a delightful human being.
Yeah, I haven't seen this one either, so this will be interesting.
And this was Colin Trevorrow came back for this one.
Right, because who did the Fallen Kingdom? Was that
J.A. Bayona? That's right. Who did The Orphanage?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it gets all like gothic and moody in mm-hmm. its third act.
Yeah, I mean, I think it. I go back and forth on if trilogy should be three different directors or one director.
I think
it just depends on who's steering the ship.
Yeah, I think it depends on and what kind of the art, what kind of the, like, I don't think the superhero movies necessarily need to have the same director all through, unless
no,
it's something
think,
like Sam Raimi kind of.
I think it's just it's like, do you want Star Wars or do you want Lord of the Rings?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's, do you want like I think of like the best trilogies. Even if it's the same director, each movie has a distinct identity.
Yeah.
And maybe this is like a home video thing, but it's because I feel like they're always color-coded.
Yeah.
Like the Lord of the Rings movies. The first one's green, the middle one's red, and the last one's blue.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just the extended edition DVDs I'm thinking of, but that's what I think of when I think of those boxes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're right. I think... Yeah, each movie should have its own identity, even if it is telling, you know, a saga. But.
And that's, I think the problem is none of the Jurassic movies stand out compared to the original. It's, you know, it's Jaws. This is not nearly as bad as Jaws 3D, but it's the same thing where we're in, based on ideas by Michael Crichton and themes by John Williams, score by Don Davis.
But no, I mean, it is. I think Jurassic Park, like Jaws, it's the sequels are just trying to chase the high of that first movie and for varying degrees of success.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to get the moment with the T-Rex, they're trying to get the moments with the Raptors. They're trying to, you know, they're just trying to rehash all that stuff, for better or worse, depending on how cynical you are about it.
Yeah, that's the long and short of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, well, let's do it again. Let's run it back. it's a fun movie. It's like, it's one of those things where we're catching the franchise at a couple of their lower points.
Yeah.
But it is just, God, Jurassic Park's so good.
It really is. I mean,
it's so good.
They did that re-release, the 3D re-release in like 2013, mm-hmm. and it was so fun to see it on the big screen again.
Yeah, I didn't even care that it was in 3D. No. I just was like, God, yes, this movie is so good in the theater.
Yeah.
It's such an experience.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it just plays, and especially with a crowd, it was like, oh, this is the summer of 1993 again. It just felt like watching it again when I was 8 or 7, yeah. however old I was when that came out. It just, it was a formative experience, and I don't know. We grew up in the 90s were a weird time for blockbusters. It wasn't like the 80s where you had a year like 1982 with like The Road Warrior and E.T. and The Thing and like all these, you know.
No, you had more like, if you had that, it was like, it wasn't all genre and it wasn't right. All blockbusters.
Yeah.
I think of like 1995 where you have like Babe and Apollo 13 right. and Braveheart and Quiz Show and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
It's like it was a weirder cross section. It was also like franchises weren't a thing. Like you'd make a movie and maybe you'd get a second one, but like studios didn't look at it the same way. They didn't look at it. It's like, oh, we're going to get 3 movies and, you know, we're going to get 5 movies in a shared universe out of this.
Right.
It was just kind of like, let's, you know, if this is a hit, great. We'll make another one and it might make the same amount of money.
Yeah. Or probably won't, but you know, it's, and it's actually,
or it's like, wait, we made a sequel. Let's gun it and run it on the second one. And you get like The Mummy Returns or something.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's sort of interesting that it took until the Jurassic World movies for Jurassic Park to get an animated series. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
You'd sort of expect at least.
I think it's one of those things you probably had to get Spielberg to sign off on it.
Yeah. It's one of those things you would have thought the 90s would have been all over, but.
And he was probably still deep in Warner Brothers animation at the time. So, yeah, it's one of the things. And the DreamWorks animated shows are the only time they've ever come back to the Barbasol can. It's one of those plot points that's like left hanging and they never came back to it. Natty the movies.
That's so funny. I haven't seen any of the DreamWorks.
I don't know if it goes anywhere. I just know that it comes back. I remember seeing, because I worked on the same floor as them for a little while at DreamWorks, and they had the artwork, like the prop designs of it. And I was like, oh, it's
the Barbasol can.
It's a Greeked version of the Barbasol can. Because they can't say Barbasol.
Right. Anyway, it's one of those things where you sort of would have expected it to, because the toy line was so huge for Kenner, you would have expected them to make a...
I think if it had come out 5 years earlier or 10 years later,
yeah.
it would have had an animated series.
Yeah.
It would have had one like back-to-back with the Rambo and RoboCop animated shows.
Rambo, RoboCop, Toxic Avenger, all of them.
God. Oh, yeah. Will... We can talk. There's a Toxic Avenger reboot coming out.
That's
we get
right.
to talk about Toxic Avenger 3.
I've only ever seen the first Toxic Avenger.
I haven't seen any of them. I'm not versed in my trauma.
Yeah, I can't say that I like trauma very much.
No, it's, but we should check it out.
Check it
we
out.
Should probably Last Temptation of Toxie. Yeah. We should check it
we
out.
We should do it.
We'll go in cold. I'm not going to watch the first two.
Yeah.
That's the Lloyd Kaufman spirit. Yeah.
Make a movie for $5.
Hey, Ed, you could start there. Now he's going to cameo in Superman.
I'm sure he will. Yeah,
I cannot wait to see him in Superman.
That'd be amazing. All right.
Well, folks, we'll be back next time with more dinosaur goodness. We're going to jump ahead a solid 20 plus years, I guess. Yeah, 20 years.
No, a little bit more, right?
2022. 21 years.
Yeah.
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 Time has no meaning anymore. No. But Jurassic World Dominion. And that'll be next time. Will, always fun. I always love doing a 92-minute movie because it's easy breezy.
So easy. This only took like 2 viewings to get through.
I did it in 1 because Cece took a nice beefy nap.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah, 92 minutes are great for those longer naps, but 92-minute movies.
Yeah, they need to make more 92-minute movies so I can watch movies.
They really do. Anyway, Sam, it's great to be back. I've missed this.
We hope you've been enjoying the last couple episodes, and if they sound suspiciously like they were recorded in October, it's all in your head. Everything is new and fresh around here. And folks, looking forward to talking about dinosaurs again next week, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.